Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1.5 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
My guest today is Zach Reynolds. He joins Tyler and I to discuss a wide range of topics, primarily centered around the idea of probabilistic thinking and its impact on markets.
These are always fun. Selfishly, it's fun for me to sit in here and listen to you guys have these conversations. But this is an idea, as I was sitting listening to it, this is an idea that I think a lot of our listeners, our clients, they face every day. This idea of probabilistic thinking, you're making a decision. So I had a lot of fun listening to you two talk about this, and I think our listeners will too.
I know you'll enjoy our conversation and hope it serves you along your journey. Zach, thanks for coming by. I know you and I both enjoy games of chance, if you will. So is that a fair categorization?
With a strong preference toward games of skill with some element of chance. Important. If you think about a casino, a game of chance, complete chance would be a game like roulette, where the ball is going to fall in some number. And if you bet on the right number, you'll win. If you don't, you're going to lose. Or the right color, right? A game of skill that still has an element of chance would be a game like poker, where over a long period of time, the better players are going to make more money. But on any particular hand, a bad player can beat a good player. One interesting test, I read about this, I can't remember which book it was that I read about it, but I think actually the Supreme Court used this test. They said, if you can intentionally lose a game, then that is one definition of a game of skill. So, you know, chess, you could lose intentionally, right? Certainly a skill game. Poker, you can lose intentionally, right? You can only bet when you know you have the worst hand and you will lose, right?
Yep.
Unlike many other games where, you know, roulette, good luck. Try to intentionally lose. You should do just as well as if you're trying to intentionally win.
So one of the things that you and I both kind of, we approach it through a probabilistic thinking standpoint. So Howard Marks has a memo entitled You Bet that we both really enjoy. Annie Duke's book, Thinking and Bets, is a fantastic book exploring this idea. How does probabilistic thinking and sort of thinking and bets affect your approach towards markets?
It affects almost everything. I think the problem that a lot of people have, and one of the many behavioral biases that people suffer from, is overconfidence. And they think because they know a company, know in air quotes here, because maybe they have the same hometown. Maybe it's, you know, Sonic when they were public, or Chesapeake, or whoever it was, if you live in Oklahoma City, that stock is a good investment, right? And we know enough from learning and studying markets that that's not typically a great way to invest, because any company, as good as it may be, or any stock, has risk associated with it and can lose money. So we always take that into account when constructing portfolios, and that has implications all the way down the line, ultimately leading us to construct portfolios that are very widely diversified, recognizing that even though we may feel good about a particular investment, that doesn't eliminate the risk that something unexpected may happen.
I think you and I have talked before about how there's people who feel really good about playing certain cards in poker.
That's right.
Annie Duke specifically talks about the idea of suited connectors. Is that kind of analogous that you may feel good about playing them, but do you remember what she said about it in the book?
Yeah, she talks a lot about how people often overvalue that hand.
And for those of you who don't play cards much, suited connectors in Texas Hold'em would be whenever you hold two low cards, like a six and a seven of diamonds, and you do have the beginnings of several opportunities with a flush or a straight.
That's right.
I'm glad you cleared that up, because I was about to hit pause real quick and be like, Yanni, you guys got to back up here. Thank you for the clarification.
What's interesting about that hand, and really poker thinking, and this is analogous to investing as well, poker thinking has evolved a lot over time. And there was a time where I think suited connectors were undervalued. And I think Annie writes about that a little bit in the book, because they do have an ability to make straights, flushes, could be two pair. It could potentially be a well-disguised hand. And so people did well with it for a while. But then everyone kind of learned about the fact that suited connectors can be powerful. And so many people now may play them regardless of if it's a good idea, calling raises when they're very likely to have a worse hand and make poor decisions around that. I will make a point that I think will relate this to investing. So something that a fact about investing for a very long period of time was that value stocks tend over a long period of time to outperform growth stocks or stocks with different characteristics.
As measured by the metrics we've talked about before, price to earnings, price to book, traditional valuation metrics.
Exactly right. And there are various explanations for that. However, I will say, you know, the full story on this fact has not been written, but value stocks have underperformed for a very long period of time now. They've had some brief periods of outperformance, including some this year. But on average, growth has strongly outperformed value over the last decade plus at this point. One theory in the investing world is people have recognized that value stocks tend to outperform, and therefore people buy them, and that inefficiency, if you will, in the market has largely gone away. You could make the same argument in the poker world for suited connectors. People know about it well enough now that there's really not the opportunity that there once was.
That's interesting. You mentioned earlier with the sort of overconfidence that people have. So one that you and I have talked about is the people consistently saying that for the last two probably presidential election cycles, the pollsters have got it wrong and they did not predict it correctly. You're nodding along here. What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's really funny how bad people are at probability and statistics. And I think the presidential elections are a great example. When in 2016, when Trump was elected over Clinton, you certainly had some people who acted like there was no chance for Hillary, but most respected statisticians, Nate Silver, et cetera, maybe had
538
had Hillary, let's call it a 30 or Trump at a 30 some percent chance. People automatically rounded that down to zero, as in a 1 in 3 chance never happens. Of course, 1 in 3 chances happen all the time. Could you argue that the polls missed out on something? Probably so. And pollsters, even in 2020, didn't do quite as good a job as you might have expected. But people misunderstand statistics and probability all the time. Another example of that more recently has been COVID. And I think it has exposed how poor people's ability to understand risk on every side of the spectrum. And there have been great studies on one I know that stood out to me was, I think if you were on the left side of the political spectrum, they asked you, what's the chances if you get COVID or the chances you get hospitalized? I think the number ended up being like 40% or something higher than that. And of course, the true number is much, much lower in the single percentage point range. And it just shows you people do not do a good job putting actual risk into numbers and understanding how that may affect their life.
Another one of our worldviews is that human beings are human beings. You and I are included in that. So how do you fight that bias in yourself whenever you're either playing cards, playing fantasy football, or investing money?
The first step is recognizing that you may have a problem. but, you know, people who've written a lot about behavioral finance talk all the time about, they always get that question, right? Is like, oh, you know all these things, so how do you keep yourself from making those mistakes? And almost invariably, they will say, oh no, I still make many behavioral errors all the time because I'm human and that's just the way it goes. There is a quote from Morgan Housel that I like quite a lot. I try to keep this in mind when I'm not just making decisions, but trying to think about how I view the world or other people. But I think the quote is something like, what has happened to you makes up 0.00001% of all the things that have happened in the world, but it colors 80% of how you view the world. And it's just a good reminder, you know, that we all have our own experience and we see through the lens that our experience created. But Dexter and Tyler, you guys have had a different experience, let alone someone on the other side of the world. And there's lots of different ways to say that, you know, if walk a mile in his shoes and you may get a different perspective. So bringing it back to investing, I think reading widely is really important. Understanding.
And just to make sure, reading widely across people you agree with and who echo everything that you say is the right way. Is that what you're trying to say?
Only confirmation bias is all we're looking for.
Making sure.
No, I think challenging your belief system is very important. And that's why I tell clients and we tell everyone here, we want to be evidence-based. Oftentimes, I think the evidence is going to agree with what we do. But if there's evidence that we could do something differently or it's saying something different, I want to read that even more than the things that confirm what I'm already doing. I may ultimately look at it and disagree with it. Certainly, there's a whole field of mutual fund salespeople who are highly incentivized to tell me that the way we do things is wrong and they're really smart people are going to outperform the market. I've dealt with that for 15 years. And on average, I think we've made the right decisions. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to take their white papers and read them. I do that all the time. And I think that's a really important point if you're going to be making decisions, particularly about other people's money. You've got to challenge your beliefs.
I think that's one thing that I appreciate when I think about our team that we have here is we all come from very different backgrounds. We all have different views on life, though. To your stat earlier, you know, we all have a different lens that we view things through. And whether it's with specifically the behavioral finance side, I think it's always interesting to hear our conversations that go on because, you know, it's important people understand we don't agree on everything all the time. Now, we get to a point where we agree the overall purpose and the general path that we're going as far as firm-wide, we have the same goal in mind. To take care of our clients, to be evidence-based. But it's the little decisions along the way. It's listening to you and Dexter talk about, you know, in our investment team meetings. It's listening to David, Zach, and Scott talk about, you know, the future of the firm. It's really neat to see all of that come together. Ideally, at the end of the day, we all sit back and have that long-term greater goal in mind. But yeah, no, I think that's a great point.
So NFL season is coming up as of the time of recording here, and you're smiling. So what are some of your favorite NFL related games of skill, if you will?
Oh man, fantasy football has, you know, I played it for 5, 6, 7 years now probably, and it's amazing. And I know Dexter, I will say, is much more skilled than I am. I often go to him for my fantasy football consult.
What is it that you enjoy about fantasy football?
I think it is similar to poker in a lot of ways. There certainly on any given Sunday, there's an incredibly wide range of things that can happen. So much like on any hand of poker, you can play really well and still lose. So thinking through, for example, constructing a fantasy football roster that gives you the best chance to win is very similar to investing, to poker. You try to find value where you can.
Yep.
Guys with high potential upside and relatively high floor as well. So the minimum points that they're likely to score relative to the maximum amount. It's very similar to investing in that regard. So I certainly enjoy it. Dexter, you've been playing longer than I have. How do you relate it to investing in poker?
Yeah, I relate it to trying to spot market inefficiencies. So I have a league with a few buddies that I'm the commissioner of, and we have a very complex set of rules that basically I created with the thought being that if I could stop myself from finding market inefficiencies, that I didn't think anybody else would. So I know that sounds incredibly arrogant, but I created the keeper rules such that, but it's just outside of the male camaraderie that exists because we're immature and can't establish meaningful relationships in a different capacity. Ignoring that, it's the intersection of sports, investing, and math that I really enjoy with fantasy football.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the group thread on Sundays whenever somebody goes off and yes. You're... Yeah.
I'd much rather have that discussion than go on Reddit and talk about meme stocks. So I'm with you on that.
So one of the last ones that I think is just interesting that I think you've played around a little bit is Predict It. So
yes.
Just kind of for those who may not know, what is Predict It?
Yeah, Predict It is run actually by a university. I believe it's in Australia. But the idea behind Predict It is if we can allow people to bet real money on the outcome of various events, then we are likely to have better information as just a society, and we'll be able to make better decisions because of that. So thinking back to like Brexit, for example, Predict It, it was more likely that the UK was going to stay in the EU based on people actually betting real money. That matched up with the polls pretty closely, but not exactly. And that's often interesting when you see differences between a popular opinion poll, which someone, a pollster, attempts to create a group that mirrors the population, they call them up. Dexter says, yes, I think I would vote stay versus someone putting real dollars on the line, which is a very different set of incentives there. So I like Predict It. I go there often to get a sense for what the betting public is predicting on various things. So you can go on there and look at the outcome of things like elections, Supreme Court nominations, policy changes like tax rates. So it can be useful as a guide for thinking, but the betting public is not always right either, as you guys know.
Yeah, there's a confidence interval and people don't necessarily understand probability, statistics, ranges of outcomes.
And this is a good time, I think, to plug Annie Duke's book, Thinking in Bets. And early on in the book, she talks about if you sit around at any table with a number of people, someone is likely to make a comment or prediction probably with more confidence than they should, you know. I guarantee you Donald Trump's going to win the next election, right?
Because I do it every year with Oklahoma State football, every year.
There you go.
I'm the overconfident,
right?
Overconfident guy.
Someone is going to make that prediction. Now, at most tables, as Annie Duke will say, you know, it's not polite to say, oh, really, you want to bet? however, she sits around poker tables all day, and it is totally the norm if someone spouts off to say, oh, you think so? You want to bet?
Do you remember the Des Moines bet?
Yeah, I do remember the Des Moines bet, which is an excellent story about a guy. I can't remember how it came up.
It was at a poker table at 2 a.m., I think, and there was a guy who said something to the effect of that he would give up this lifestyle for X amount of money.
Right.
And they all then said, want to bet? And again, I could be getting the details off, but they forced him to go live at an apartment complex in Des Moines, Iowa for 30 days. And he made it two before he then was trying to
buy out the bet and move back to Vegas.
Gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah. But I mean, it does go to show you, and you know, I've probably done this some in my life too. People, I think it's interesting to spot people who may let their emotions or biases influence their opinions or predictions about the future. And if you're good enough friends with them and they can be good natured about it, it can be fun to wager with those people.
Could you provide an example of how that has played out that you're comfortable sharing?
I've made some bets on political outcomes, not all of which have been correct. Politics, and I'm neither a Republican nor a Democrat, so it's kind of fun for me to bet with people who might have a very strong political opinion one way or the other and try to arbitrage that opportunity, because oftentimes I'm not emotionally invested in the outcome.
So you will sometimes make a simultaneous bet with both a Republican friend and a Democrat friend?
That is called that's the dream scenario there. Then you're just the house, right? So if you can get the right sort of odds.
Tyler, as you sit here listening to us talk about our affinity for poker, gambling, et cetera, what goes through your head and what questions do you have?
You know, at first, it's the fact that, well, you two are managing my money and we're talking about poker. But at the end of the day, we've brought up two very key points. One, just the behavioral finance side of our world that we live in. And two, the, you know, that probabilistic side of our world that we live in. There's so much out of our control and there's so much emotion involved. And so to me, it goes back to, and I'll take input here from either of you, it goes back to, what does the evidence tell us? What has history shown us? And we're not making bets moving forward by any means, I don't think, but we're making a very concerted effort to make sure that we're equipping all of our clients with the knowledge to not try to take a bet. Don't swing for the fences. This is the long game. But I think both of these things, I spend a lot of my time on the behavioral finance side of this conversation with clients. And I think you guys spend a lot of your time on the probabilistic thinking side as far as the type of questions you get asked. So
one thing that I think is worth bringing up as well is the idea of decision-making before an event. Dexter and I have discussed quite a bit. Annie Duke has taught some courses. And I don't know if we said Annie Duke, professional poker player for a long time. I was a PhD student, very smart, dropped out to play professional poker. Now she does a lot of corporate speaking. And again, we referenced her book.
In risk quantifying probabilistic thinking, obviously.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll put a link in,
okay,
in the
great.
Description.
We'll have a link in there. One thing that she writes about, though, she'll go teach a course and she will talk about a particular poker hand. She'll say, here were the cards I was dealt. Here's the other setup. Here was my thinking based on the flop, the first three cards that came out of five total cards. Here's all the different thoughts I had. Here's why I made the bet I did or the fold I did or whatever. And then she'll move on to the next hand and her students will often raise their hand and say, wait, we want to know what happened. Did you win the hand? And she will say,
are you even paying attention to what I'm talking about? Decisions are judged based off what you knew at the time you made them.
Yep. And I think that's an incredibly important point. And I think about that a lot. I agree with what Tyler said. We don't want to make bets in the sense that we think the market is generally very efficient. And therefore, if we make a bet, on average, the expectation is if we make two bets, we might win one. And there's just not a lot of reason to do that.
Right.
However, we're still investing money and we're going to invest money in places, for example, in emerging markets this year.
Mm-hmm.
Great example of an area where great reasons to invest beforehand.
Demographics are fantastic. Valuations. Yep.
Many good reasons to invest in emerging markets. Something happened earlier this year that was very unexpected. China cracked down very hard in some unexpected ways on things like education tech companies. Literally, basically saying you can't make money in education technology and effectively wiping out multi-billion dollar valuation companies. that was not something the market expected. So you can argue, oh, okay, the market wasn't efficient. It didn't do a great job there. And that's totally fair. We certainly were invested in exchange traded funds that had exposure to those companies. Those went down in value. So we can make good decisions, or at least decisions that had very good evidence backing them, and then have a negative outcome to some extent, where you lose money. And the absolute same is true of poker, where you can make the right decisions, you can feel good about that decision, you can lose the hand. The point, though, is making sure that your decision-making is correct, or as correct as it can be with the information you have.
Yeah.
And that's what we think about a lot. That's what Howard Marks writes about in his memo, You Bet, that I would highly recommend
it. I can't remember where I heard it, but it was on a webinar, I think, where they said that if you got the story right about the impact of COVID on the world, it is almost impossible that you then made the correct stock market investment. If you knew that's what was going to happen, it is almost impossible that you then said, I'm going to buy equities.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. If you knew the world was going to shut down, you would be selling and you would be shorting, right? If you had that crystal ball, and you would have been wrong.
That's, yeah. No, I haven't thought about it like that. It's a great point.
And, you know, it has implications as we sit here today. I mean, again, everyone, we talk about this a lot on these podcasts, but people often ask, hey, is it a good time to invest? Or, hey, I'm worried the market's at all-time highs. Should I invest today? And it's a totally reasonable question from an investor standpoint, but you can't look at it like a lot of people look at it, which is, hey, if I put money in today and the market goes down, that was a bad decision, right? That's just not the way investing works.
You caught the seven of clubs on the river and made it. You had a 2% chance.
Exactly.
That was not a good decision.
And the beautiful thing about investing is, you know, markets do go up over time, not because there's any rule that they have to, but because economies grow over time, we have confidence that we have rule of law in America and capitalism works. Like, you do have to have a core set of beliefs to think the market's going to go up over time. History has rewarded those who do have that belief. So it's not even like poker in that sense. Like, yes, if you're a very good poker player, you're likely to make money over time. It's almost more like being the house, like being the casino to me. If you're investing broadly in the market, you may lose money on one particular day because Phil Ivey comes in and he's figured out some inefficiency in a particular
in
game.
In the Baccarat system.
Which really did happen. That's another thing to look up. Although the casino took him to court and the casino ended up winning, I believe. So the house always does win over time. But that's almost the way I think of our method of investing is, yeah, it's not super sexy on any particular given day, but when you drive down Las Vegas Boulevard and you see those casinos and you realize that, you know, they were not built by handing out money to all the people walking in, you know, then I feel pretty good about it. And ironically, many of the casinos now are owned by some of the large asset managers like Blackstone and others out there. So, which I always kind of think is funny.
Just to prove that you're human as we end here, what is your favorite poker hand that when you see it, it's not necessarily a traditionally strong hand, but you enjoy playing it?
Yeah, pocket nines. I mean, which is a good hand, but certainly there are a lot better hands. But it's one I almost certainly overvalue because I've had some very good wins with pocket nines. And I always just, I feel, and that's a dangerous word, right? I just feel like I'm going to have a nine come out on the flop if I have pocket nines.
Want to bet on that?
Well played.
Until next time, fair winds and following seas.
If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week. All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.